Today I want to look at the question, how can I be sure that God exists? Now this is an important question for everyone. You might be someone who's interested in Christianity, but you want to be sure it's true before you go any further. And what we're looking at today will be of help to you. Or you may believe in God, but sometimes you have doubts. Or you may be a convinced Christian, but you want to know the best way to explain to your friends that God is real. Or maybe you're a convinced atheist. If you're a convinced atheist, you still need to know the arguments for God's existence so that you can evaluate whether you're right or not. Whatever position you're coming from, I think that the arguments we're going to look at here will be of value to you. So, how can I be sure that God exists? In order to answer this, we need to know something about the God whose existence we are talking about, because different people use the word God in different ways. I'm going to be talking about the God whom Jesus taught about. God is a creator. He made us. He is eternal and all-powerful, and very importantly, he can be known by us. To give us some idea of what God is like, I'll look at something Jesus said about God. This is the passage we just looked at in our main reading. Now, Jesus was not popular with the religious authorities of his day. They tried to catch him out with trick questions or test him with hard questions. And on this occasion, a lawyer, here it means a teacher of the law, Old Testament law, tried to test Jesus with a hard question, though it was not hard for Jesus to answer. It's a short passage, so let's go through it again so we can see what's happening here. In Matthew 22, verses 35 to 40, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he, Jesus, said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. Jesus said that the most important commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This command tells us that God did not just make this world and then lose interest in it. He calls us to relate to him. Jesus talks about loving the Lord your God. So God is not just out there somewhere and unknowable. We can know God and come to him and belong to him so that he is our God whom we love. Now that's not romantic love, of course, but reverent love, the reverent love due to God, our Creator, who is so much greater than us, that we should be in awe of him and therefore gladly submit to him and obey him. And God has given us commandments to obey, such as those that Jesus talks about here in this passage we've just been looking at. God has communicated to us in the Bible so that we are not left in the dark, wondering what God is like or how we should live our lives. Because we have God's word, the Bible, we know who God is, who we are, and where we're going, and we can relate to God and love him. That's the prospect we're talking about here. Not simply adhering to the beliefs of a religion, but knowing God. But, and this is the crucial question, how can I be sure that God exists? I'm going to set out arguments for God's existence. I'm not arguing that God possibly exists or that God probably exists. I'm arguing that God certainly exists. In fact, that the existence of God is inescapable, and that if you try to escape his existence, if you deny his existence, then you end up with a view of life that is unworkable. Not simply a view that is unpleasant, but one that you cannot be consistent to, one that you cannot live by. I'm going to look at this in two particular areas. There's more that we could cover, but for the sake of brevity, I'm just going to look at two things, and the first of those is our personal identity, what we mean when we say I think, I like, I hope, I want. What do we mean when we say I? Well, let's start by looking at the Christian view. There's a wonderful expression in the first chapter of the Bible concerning the creation of man. It says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them." Man is made in the image of God. Male and female are equally in God's image. What does it mean to be made in God's image? It doesn't mean our physical appearance, of course. God isn't physical, he is spirit. To be made in God's image means that in some ways we are like God. And one of the ways we are like God is that, like God, we have a spiritual nature. We have a soul. Now, this means that when we say I, we're not simply referring to our physical bodies. When we say I think, I hope, I believe, I trust, we're talking about ourselves. We are saying I'm a person, a self, who has a mind and a will. Now, God has a personal nature. He has a mind and a will. He thinks, plans, and does. In fact, God is the ultimate person. He has a perfect mind. He has infinite wisdom and complete self-knowledge. Now, we're not infinite, nor are we perfect, are we? But because we are made in God's image, we have a real personal nature. When we talk about our mind, our will, and our personal character, we're talking about something real, something that exists in our spiritual nature. But if atheism is true, then we don't have a spiritual nature. Only matter exists, and we are just material objects. All that we are is what is currently contained within our skin. That's all we are, the human body. It's composed of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, calcium, and phosphorus. That makes up 99% of the body, and there are tiny amounts of other elements that make up the remaining 1%. Now, there's nothing special about the carbon and so on in your body. It's the same as the carbon, etc., anywhere else in the universe. We know about the atomic structure of these elements. We know how they react. And according to atheism, that is all you are. According to atheism, when you think, when you choose, when you prefer something, it is just a result of the forces of attraction and repulsion between the particles that make up the atoms of your body. That's all it is, because there is nothing else to produce your thoughts and decisions. Your mind and your will don't really exist. They're just words that we use for behaviors that are caused by the predictable interaction of the protons, neutrons, and electrons that make up your body. If atheism is true, that's it. And this is the thing to grasp. These particles react in known, fixed ways. So your thoughts and decisions are the inevitable result of the physical state of your body and its environment. This is what we call determinism, because everything is predetermined by the laws of physics. You don't have free will because you don't have a will at all. You are a machine. Now, some atheists will dispute this and say there is an answer to this problem in quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is an aspect of modern physics, and some views of quantum mechanics hold that there is an underlying randomness or unpredictability that produces the deterministic behavior of matter. But that doesn't help atheism, because the behavior of matter still is deterministic, and even if there is an underlying randomness, that doesn't give you a will. You're still only a material object. It would just mean that you were a random machine instead of a deterministic machine, but you're still a machine. Atheism cannot explain personal identity, your mind, your will, your character, because atheism has to reduce you to a material object obeying the laws of physics, because in atheism, that's all there is. Now, a philosophy of life is supposed to explain the realities of life, isn't it? But atheism cannot explain personal identity. It can only destroy it. It robs it, the term, of any meaning. But if God is real, then personal identity makes sense, because God is the ultimate person, and we are made in his image. If you're an atheist and you become a Christian, suddenly everything starts to make sense, because it makes sense in the light of God's existence. And God has made us in his image, and so our personal identity makes sense. We all behave as if our personal identity is real. When we say, I think, I hope, I believe, we're asserting the existence of our real personal identity, aren't we? Our mind and will and character. But personal identity only makes sense if the personal creator God is real and has made us in his image. So, when we assert our personal identity, we are asserting the existence of God. And we cannot avoid asserting our personal identity. We do it every time we talk about ourselves, and every time we think of ourselves as something more than a mere machine. We cannot help it. It is built into us. And this is why I said that the existence of God is inescapable, because we cannot live as if atheism is true, and we cannot stop ourselves behaving as if God is real. Now, the other topic I want to look at today is morality. The idea of morality is also built into us. Everyone has moral standards. We all behave as if there are rules of right and wrong. We may disagree as to what those rules are, but we all live as if there are such rules. How do we account for the existence of moral laws? It's straightforward from the Christian point of view. I mentioned earlier what Jesus said about the greatest commandments: love God with all your heart, and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said these were the most important commandments in God's law. Moral laws are real because God has given us laws. As our creator, he has the right to do this, and he has made us in his image. Therefore, we appreciate and understand the concept of morality. God has revealed his law to us in the Bible so that we can know what his commandments are. But not everyone accepts the law of God, because man is in rebellion against God. So in brief, the Christian explanation of morality is that, one, moral laws are real because God has the right to command us, and he has given us his laws to follow. Two, everyone has moral standards because we are made in God's image. And three, but we do not follow God's standards as we should because we're in rebellion against God. That makes sense, doesn't it? But how do we account for morality if God does not exist? If atheism is true, then we're just matter, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and so on. Matter doesn't have duties, doesn't have moral duties, does it? It just obeys the laws of physics. And if we're only material objects, then we do what the laws of physics make us do. And there can be no moral laws that tell us what we ought to do, because matter doesn't have duties. But atheists do have morals, don't they? Atheists are made in the image of God the same as the rest of us, although they deny it. And therefore they understand the concept of morality and have their own moral views and moral systems. But how do they account for this? The atheist explanation for morality is that we have moral behavior because it gives a survival advantage to our species. I don't think anyone would want to dispute that there are benefits to moral behavior, and some of those benefits will increase our ability to survive, but the atheist's view is that survival advantage is the only reason that we have moral behavior. And that's underlined when you look at the atheist belief as to how we got our moral behavior. They believe that a chance genetic change in an ancient ancestor of ours, a change perhaps caused by cosmic rays damaging its DNA or errors in its DNA duplication, those errors caused the ancestor to behave in a moral way. And that behavior gave it a survival advantage, and so the trait got passed on to us, its descendants. Now, you see what this means? It means there is no such thing as right and wrong, really, if atheism is true. It's just that random changes to our ancestors' DNA cause them to behave as if there were such things as moral standards, and that helped them to survive. The atheist view of moral behavior actually destroys the meaning of morality. But couldn't we have a moral system based on what gives a survival advantage? Well, you could. You can invent a moral system based on whatever you want. But if atheism is true, then your moral system is meaningless. There is no reason why our species ought to survive. There is no reason why any species ought to survive, because if atheism is true, the idea of ought is meaningless. There's no reason why anything ought to be like this or ought to be like that. There just is what there is, matter in motion, doing what the laws of physics make it do. And therefore, there are no grounds for saying that anything is right or wrong. Carbon doesn't have moral duties. Hydrogen doesn't have moral duties. The elements don't have moral duties, do they? And according to atheism, that is all you are. And therefore, if atheism is true, then moral laws are meaningless. And yet atheists do have morals. They promote a philosophy that makes morality meaningless, and yet they still have morals. And why is that? It's because their philosophy is wrong, isn't it? They are made by God, in the image of God. And God has put an understanding of morality into us all. It's part of our being, because we're made in his image. And therefore, atheists cannot help behaving as if moral laws are real. And when they do that, they're behaving as if God is real, because without God, there can be no real moral laws. The existence of God is inescapable. Even people who explicitly deny God's existence still live as if God exists. We all do. We all live as if our personal identity is real. We all live as if moral laws are real. And yet these things only make sense if we are made in the image of the personal creator God who has given us laws to live by. We all continually demonstrate the reality of God's existence moment by moment, day by day. There's this constant witness to the reality of God built into our very nature. It's there all the time, and there's no escape from it because God is real. But you may ask, well, okay, but why should it be the God of Christianity who is the real God? Well, God has to be a personal creator God who has made us in his image if we are to make any sense of our personal identity. And he has to have given us commandments that he requires us to obey if there are to be real moral laws. And this is the God that we read about in the Bible. Now, we could make up a religion with a God like that, but it wouldn't be true. It would just be something we'd made up. We need God to tell us about himself if we're to have accurate knowledge of him. And this is what we have in the Bible. The Old Testament on its own is incomplete. The Messiah has not come. Now, in the New Testament, Jesus, the Messiah, has come and fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies. You know, there's a prophecies in the Old Testament about the Gentile nations worshipping the God of Israel. Since Jesus has come, sent out his apostles, here we are in the world today. You look around, look at the nations of the world. There are people in practically every nation of the world who worship the God of Israel. Jesus has come and fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies. The Bible is complete. Jesus, the Son of God, has come. He has made atonement for sin. He has preached his message, and he has sent his people to spread his message across the world. And there's nothing more that needs to be said. Now, there are a number of other religions that were started after Christianity that claim to be based on further revelation from the God of the Bible. But why would God send someone else to start a new religion when he has already sent his son? That doesn't make sense. The Bible is the complete revelation from God. It tells us what God is like, and what it tells us enables us to make sense of our lives. We don't need anything else. It even enables us to understand concepts like personal identity and morality, which atheism cannot make sense of. God is real. The God whom Jesus taught about is real. What should our response to this be? Jesus tells us what our response should be. Remember what I mentioned earlier. Jesus said that the most important commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. We can know God. He should be our God whom we love with all our heart, soul and mind. That's the only sensible response to the existence of God. So please, you know, if you're not a believer in Jesus Christ, please don't suppress what you know, that God is real. Don't ignore him. And don't think that you can come to God on your own terms. It has to be on his terms, and you can find out about his terms by reading the Bible. It's all God's word, but start by reading about the life and teaching of the Son of God in the Gospels. And of course, feel free to ask us about any questions you may have. Amen.